You are listening to Faithless Brewing, a Magic the Gathering podcast for the rogue deck builder. Each week, we design new decks in Modern and Pioneer. We put our creations to the test and share our findings on the air. Coming up on the roundup, a look at the Strixhaven Mystical Archive. Then on a flashback, testing results with Hero's Blade, Peace of Mind, and Alruun's Epiphany. This is episode 2 of Strixhaven Season. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Faithless Brewing Podcast. I am David, joined by Damon Alexander. Damon, what's up?
Hey, not too much. Just living in my sparkly clean apartment.
Good to hear. Got to treat yourself sometimes. We are joined by a man who prizes cleanliness. He is Caved In Online. He is Daniel Schriever. Dan, what's up?
I'm doing well. Good to see you guys.
So, just a quick reminder, we are releasing 2 episodes per week. On Friday, we went through a good chunk of the latest and greatest spoilers of Strixhaven. Today, we are going to talk about some of the Mystical Archive previews, as well as an early MH2 preview, and we have a few deck lists we took a look at last week. So, let's jump right into it. First of all, Mystical Archive. What are we looking at, Damon?
Yeah, so Mystical Archive consists of 63 instants and sorceries from Magic's history that you get one of in each draft booster. And then there's all this, you know, distribution stuff and collector's boosters. There's Japanese alt arts, etch foil variants, et cetera, et cetera. So how you actually get them is kind of confusing. We won't focus on that. These are legal if you draft them, and they are also legal in Historic. This doesn't change any of these cards' legality in Standard, Modern, or Pioneer. And there are 7 cards that they left out of Historic in the form of Bolt, Swords of Plowshares, Ritual, Demonic Tutor, Channel, Natural Order, Counterspell. Historic does get some interesting cards in the form of Ephemerate, Brainstorm, Time Warp, Faithless Looting, Inquisition of Kozilek, Lightning Helix, and then some Storm cards in the form of Mind's Desire and Grapeshot. So we'll see how it changes Historic. I've seen some interesting theories about how the rarities here are really meant to extract the wild cards from people's arena pockets. I don't really know. I don't actually play Arena.
Let me just jump in there for a second. When they announced that these cards are actually going to be legal in Historic, I mean, this is such a huge shakeup with the Historic format. I mean, you're rattling off some of the most powerful cards in Magic's history. Faithless Looting, banned in Modern. Brainstorm, a card that perhaps should be banned for power level reasons in Legacy, but it's not. Now that's coming to Historic. Brainstorm and Looting in Historic is crazy, not to mention Ephemerate, a card that, while perhaps a little bit overlooked at first, has become absolute all-star in Modern. So it's just like a stunning roster of cards. They did give them all the rare or mythic rarity, so this will cost you to do it. So on the one hand, I felt like a strong temptation to like start brewing in Historic, but on the other hand, I was like, oh gosh, how will we actually get access to a collection for this? It seems like a nightmare to keep up with.
Yeah, I saw some interesting commentary on Twitter about, like, what is the direction of Historic? It seemed like it was meant to be, you know, kind of like Pioneer. But with these cards, it's looking much more like an arena-friendly version of Legacy.
So I think that was a mistake that people made, thinking that it was similar to Pioneer or comparing its power level to Pioneer. I think maybe the goal was always to be something bigger. Like, as long as they believed in Arena, they would want to keep adding their IP to it. And that means that over time, Arena would have a bigger card pool than Pioneer. It would have a bigger card pool than Modern. And we started to see that with the first Historic anthologies adding cards from Legacy. So it's going to be the equivalent of like a curated Legacy-esque format. I mean, it could potentially be even more powerful than Modern, although I assume they'll never add the fetch lands to Arena because that, you know, is what makes Modern so broken. I don't know, David, do you feel any temptation to brew in Historic from these?
No, and I think a bunch of cards are going to have to get banned, but we'll let the grinders sort that out.
You don't believe in this list of 7 pre-banned cards for perfect balance in the format?
I think those cards need to be banned as well, but we'll see if people enjoy, Brainstorm and Faithless Looting with your favorite Phoenix. We'll see how they like that.
Yeah. The Mystical Archive also features some really cool art. And then the Japanese versions also have different art. And those all tend to look really cool. With a couple interesting pieces of controversy. The first was over Faithless Looting, where people were really trashing the artist for her, I would say, interesting style. I'm still not sure how I feel about it. And then Crux of Fate, which the more I look at this art, like, oh my goodness, I can't believe this person got paid money to illustrate this or in particular plagiarize parts of it.
Two different art controversies in 1 week. I follow both of these very closely because Faithless Looting is a card that is near and dear to my heart. It did nothing wrong. It should not have been banned from Modern. I liked it so much that, you know, we named our whole podcast after Faithless Looting. And really, it's never had a good artwork until now. I mean, I think this artwork is absolutely stunning. I love it. A lot of people really don't like it. But there's a clear takeaway from all this. It's like, you can dislike things. That's fine. Do not be a dick about it. And a huge swath of the Magic community massively failed that test. I mean, it was really embarrassing to just see how that played out. I was extremely disappointed in a lot of the discourse. People are unable to distinguish between I don't like this and I'm going to be a dick about it and explain how bad it is. Basic rule of thumb, ask for yourself, am I being an asshole when I'm trying to make this comment? And in many cases, people would be like, yeah, I guess I am. I just seem like everyone else was piling on, so it'd be fun to say something.
Although, are we allowed to pile on to Crux of Fate? Because the more I look at this, like, this art is just bad.
Well, that's different. I mean, it's not a question of whether it's bad, but that was actually, the artist seems to have not just referenced, but actually directly copy-pasted, almost, if such a thing is possible, copied a piece of fan art off of DeviantArt for their figure of Nicol Bolas, which is maybe unethical. It's not strictly illegal because of the Wizards fan policy. If you make fan content using Wizards IP, like, they are allowed to use that in their own products without compensating you. But the artists, in this case, shouldn't have done that. And Wizards has essentially cut ties with them. They put out a statement today. So, controversies aside, I think it is fair to say that art-wise, both the regular Mystical Archive and the Japanese versions are perhaps the coolest thing Magic has ever done. So I kind of want to just focus on the positives, though. And, you know, these are absolutely sweet. I would love to own them. Would love to play with them.
Yeah. Do we know if the versions have different art, or are they just simply the etching on the original card? So you'll have like a regular Brainstorm, foil Brainstorm, etched foil Brainstorm, all with the same art?
I think both versions, regular and Japanese, will have all three of those versions.
Hmm.
If I understand correctly.
So that leaves us with, I guess, six copies of Brainstorm. Interesting. I'd be curious to see how the etched foil variants look, especially if that is our main way of avoiding Pringles on the foil front.
So apart from collectability, there's a card of particular interest included in the Mystical Archive because it is actually not a reprint. It is a preprint from Modern Horizons 2. So this card will become Modern legal in June when the rest of Modern Horizons is released to the public, although you'll be able to get it in booster packs as soon as Strixhaven comes out. So David, do you want to tell us about the Abundant Harvest?
Abundant Harvest, one green sorcery, choose land or non-land, reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a card of the chosen kind. Put that card in your hand and the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. What do you guys think?
Well, what do you think?
I think it's a powerful cantrip, and so powerful cantrips slot into a bunch of different kinds of decks.
The easiest comparison point seems to be the card Opt. A lot of times, you know, you keep like a one or two land hand with Opt, and you're like, all I want is a land. I really want a land. And sometimes it's not a land and you lose the game. Abundant Harvest will always get you a land in that situation, which is already pretty cool. Conversely, with Opt and late game, sometimes you're like, all I want is not a land, and you scry a land to the bottom and draw a land. And Abundant Harvest also dodges that problem. The question is more like around the mid game where you're like kind of trying to select, where you're like, I want a Cryptic Command, but I don't want a Lightning Bolt or something like that. This is a sorcery, so first off, you don't even get the, you know, the ability to react quite so well. And secondly, you don't get the selection over, you know, which land or which spell you're getting. So it certainly seems to be on balance like about as good as Opt, but in a color that is not supposed to get good cantrips, but suddenly it seems to get all the best cantrips of the last 2 years are all green.
I'm imagining a deck like Phoenix where you really often find yourself in both scenarios, needing the land early or needing to just chain any kind of cantrips later in the game. And I almost think I could splash for Abundant Harvest. Is that crazy?
The mana would be a little bit tough for that. This is a card that you want on land mode quite early, so I could understand why you would want to splash, but I'm skeptical that you can make the mana base work.
Well, we'll have the ability to test this out, put it through its paces a bit later on. That being said, shall we talk about some of the decks that we played? David, we'll start off with you. What were you playing last week?
So we went through a bunch of decks that we were tooling around with in Kaldheim right before the Strixhaven previews came out, but I wanted to give one last run through with my Sultai Narset Bring to Light deck. I had just missed a 5-0 before, and I was like, oh, this deck is really sweet. I think I should just give it another shot and see if I can 5-0. And then I did. And then I know, Dan, you were so intrigued. You took it through three leagues, and you also trophied. So we had two trophies with the same list, plus the 4-1 in my previous league. And we're starting to talk about a pretty impressive showing from the shell.
Well, you told me that you thought it might be the best deck in Pioneer. And I can never tell if you're being serious or not, but the deck just looks too fun to not play. And after now playing three, actually, I think I played four leagues with it now. I do get that strong best deck in Pioneer vibe from it. It's amazing to just feel like, okay, I have Narsets and Thought Seizes, and a lot of my opponents are trying to play control, and they don't have Narsets for whatever reason. Those matchups are really great. The matchups that I think are still tricky are any kind of aggro deck. I think green Planeswalkers are kind of tricky, and Izzet Phoenix is a tough matchup to navigate. I'm still learning my way around the edges of that matchup. The specifics of recursive threats plus an equal amount of card draw is a little bit tough to figure out. But on the whole, I was like, man, this deck is fantastic.
Yeah, I also think that Spirits is a really tough matchup for this deck, in my experience. So I think Spirits is the worst matchup. I also think Spirits is like always better than people think it is. I feel like it always should be near the tier one. Every time I play against it, if I'm playing against a good Spirits opponent with any variant of list I ever play from this podcast or even just on my own time, I always feel like that deck is very underrated in Pioneer.
I haven't seen it in a long time.
I know, and every time I play it, I'm like, man, why aren't people playing this more often? It just seems so good, but I don't know, maybe it's only good against the decks I play. I don't know. But yeah, if you want something that just dominates five color Niv-Mizzet, all the Orion list, and Lotus combo, like, that's what this list does. It just, those matchups aren't close. Your opponents will bitch a lot in chat if that's what makes you happy, which it does make me happy. And yeah, it's just easy. It's on easy mode. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to make any tough plays. You don't have to make any tough decisions. It's really sweet.
Yeah, looking through your guys' list of matchups, it certainly backs up that statement. Lotus combo 2-0, Niv-Miz 2-0, et cetera, et cetera.
So we'll have a list in the show notes and at faithlessbrewing.com, and you can also find it in the deck dumps from last week.
If I had to make a change, I guess the one thing I'd say is I'd probably play the second Censor over Growth Spiral. I have not been liking the Growth Spiral very much. It was an artifact of when I was playing four Growth Spiral, four Sylvan Carry added, and so I should have just turned it, I think, into literally anything else. Or maybe in a main deck Abrupt Decay.
Would you guys want to play more sweepers, given that you're saying the tough matchups are the creature-based ones?
Well, I actually want to play that new removal spell from Strixhaven that they just previewed. It's like the 3 and a black, exile a creature or planeswalker, but you can cast it for 1 and a black if you would let them draw a card. I think I need something like that that is cheap enough to be relevant early and also can take down Anissa if they do sneak Anissa into play. The Growth Spiral was not super impressive. I actually never censored anything in all of my 20 matches with it, with this deck in the last few days. So I think those are like open slots. Yeah, Abrupt Decay would be
I actually like that new spoil card, because if you upkeep it with Narset in play, they don't even get the card. It's just a 1 and a black. Exile anything somehow. Like,
yeah, that seems great for this. Definitely highly recommend this deck. Yeah, hopefully we can get some more results. I think it's a good time for me to try to farm some tickets before Strixhaven drops, because I'm sure we're going to be losing a lot once these new cards require testing. Speaking of losing a lot, we had the tail end of our Kaldheim season. Some cards that we didn't feel strongly enough to feature for an entire episode, but we thought might be worth exploring as one-offs in a build or two. And I was particularly interested in the all-legendary deck featuring the equipment card Hero's Blade. This is an equipment for 2 that gives an equipped creature +3/+2. Costs 1,000,000 mana to equip, but it free attaches 2 legends when they come into play. And I had a whole spiel last week in our Sunday episode about, you know, haste legends that can synergize with this, Kyrie-Zev synergizing, et cetera, et cetera. I played a build. Damon even took a crack at a build. And, well, interesting results. Damon, do you want to talk about what you found?
Yeah, so I took a blue-red Wizard Legend Blade deck through not even a full league. That's how it kind of went. And so this deck was based off the premise that said we want to play a lot of Legends with the Hero's Blade. And one of the most exciting Legends to me to do there was Adelise, because it comes down right on curve at 3 mana. So you play turn 2 Hero's Blade, turn 3 Adelise, and all of a sudden you're hitting for 5 haste. And ideally you played a Wizard on 1 and so on. Then on your turn 4, you can start really trying to just win the game. But I was also suckered into playing some Kari Zevs as being another good card with the Hero's Blade. And what I learned is that it doesn't work. You can't actually say that, well, Hero's Blade is good with Legends, Adelise is good with Wizards, and so it's okay if I have a little bit of, you know, non-synergy. Because what happens is you're going to go Kari Zev into Adelise a lot, and every time you do, you're going to feel kind of like an idiot, and your opponent's going to be, you know, probably laughing at you, wondering what you're possibly think you're doing.
Well, you're attacking for 5 damage. That's something, right?
Well, yeah, I didn't actually draw Hero's Blade that much, but I don't think I needed to really learn. Kari Zev has a lot of problems in this meta. There were a lot of, you know, green plays a 3-3 and that blocks Ragavan, so you plink through for 1. A lot of Sylvan Caryatids that block Ragavan and you plink through for 1. Fatal Push, if you look up the stats, it is the most played card in Pioneer. 51% of decks are playing an average of 3.7 copies. And so this is where the Hero's Blade seems to not be good. Meanwhile, against Mono Green, you know, I was doing all this work to generate, you know, like a 5-4 Adelise or a 4-5 Kari Zev, and they just go green, 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 Steel Leaf Champion. It's a 5-4 with no extra work required. And I actually got a close one game. I got them down to 1, but then I suffered from the oops, all Droll Rails problems in game 2, where I just needed to draw some extra wizards, and the wizards I drew were duplicates of the ones I had in play. There was one cool game. I got paired against none other than Cave Dan himself in a late night queue. I was not aware he was playing, and I used the Tyrite Sanctum to make Kari Zev an indestructible god, and that was enough.
Well, I thought it was a temporary thing, so I had 2 removal spells. I did 1 on the first turn, and then the next turn I tried again.
And I was like, it resolves.
Turns out that Tyrite Sanctum grants a permanent indestructible counter on the card. So yeah, I lost that game. Still had Adelise, as they say.
Yeah, but of course he crushed me the other 2 games and they were not particularly close.
So I also took a crack at Hero's Blade. When we talked about this last week, David, you'd drawn up a Jeskai list where you were suggesting that Dalakos Crafter of Wonders granting flying to your attackers would actually be quite important in the Pioneer meta. And I listened to everything you said and I was like, yeah, he's wrong. You know, we don't need flying. What if I just stick with Gruul colors and, you know, Arnie Broken Brow is pretty much as good as Dalakos, right? All kinds of haste legends in Gruul, like Galia of the Endless Dance, Zergo Bellstriker, Surak the Hunt Color. I had a Captain Lannery Storm in here, a Subira, Tolzidi Caravaneer, etc. Yeah, I was wrong. So I took this into a league and, like, man, I kept on running into ground blockers. Every time I thought I had a sweet sequence set up with Hero's Blade, I would look at the opponent's board and it's like, well, they have 1 blocker. I'm not dealing damage this turn. Or they have a young Pyromancer and I'm never getting through. It did not go very well. I scraped out 2 match wins against a Grixis Pyromancer and Rakdos Pyromancer, but I lost to Mono Black Aggro. I lost to another Rakdos Pyromancer deck, and I lost to a white, you know, mono enchantment removal deck where they just 1-for-1 me until I died. So this build was like a little bit off. Basically, I needed to play interaction. That was the takeaway that I had. At a certain point, if you're not playing removal, which I really wasn't except on my sideboard, as soon as they have something bigger than your biggest legend, you just like can't win anymore, whether that's a Kalidus or just a young Pyromancer spitting out chump blockers. So I basically sideboarded the same way every time, like took out a lot of the weak legends, took out some of the Hopagiripers and the Zergos and put in more Bone Crushers, more Lava Coils, and some more Jaya's Immolating Infernos. And then I had like a more functional deck, took out Mox Ambers, because I actually didn't need the ramp as much as I thought I would. I just needed more interaction. And then the deck felt like more or less functional, like a low synergy functional deck that didn't actually want to draw the Hero's Blade that often. I found that maybe 2 was the right number, not 4. The bright spot in the deck was Kolvori, God of Kinship. This was actually one of the cards that was actually allowing me to keep pace with removals, because as Damon just explained, Fatal Push is everywhere. And in a low synergy Legends deck, you're really not drawing many cards, but Kolvori sticks around in Pioneer. It's actually kind of hard to kill, and you can activate it pretty easily to look at your top 6 and get more legends. I was making it a 6/6 vigilance attacker all the time. And by extension, I was making Arni Brokenbrow a 7-power creature all the time. So there might be something here, just not the particular build that I played. Maybe Delicose was the key after all.
Interesting. So the takeaway is that going all in on Hero's Blade, it's just not enough of a payoff to reward you for bending your deck list around it.
Yeah, if there was like a good hexproof legend that you could play multiple copies of and play at the same time, then you'd go a long way towards fixing some of the problems with Hero's Blade. But yeah, I mean, all the decks that are really shine on, you know, making their creatures better are either playing hexproof creatures or creatures they don't care if they die, or are doing things like, you know, Stoneforge Mystic, a Batter Skull is their equipment of choice.
These were not decks where we're taking like a proven shell and adding some Hero's Blades. This is a very unproven, very speculative collection of cards that also included Hero's Blades. So there were maybe like too many unknowns to say for sure, but the Hero's Blade didn't impress that much. And the rest of the deck definitely, I think both my build and Damon's build felt a little bit off.
Yeah. Yeah, to Dan's point, I think I also scratched my Kaza Royal Chaser itch. That card is doesn't seem good.
So we'll close the book on that for the time being. There will always be new legends printed. We've talked about a bunch of them from Strixhaven already, and I'm sure we'll have more to discuss next week. Always more legends. David, to round things out, you tried out a couple different lists, one built around Vorinclex and the other built around Peace of Mind.
Yeah, so my Vorinclex list was trying to take advantage of the fact that with Vorinclex in play, a Resolve Chandra ultimates immediately. Same with a Resolve Nissa. Also, Nissa pluses to make a 6-6 every turn, which in conjunction with Vorinclex in theory is leading to your opponent dying very quickly. I went 3-2 in my league, and the list played okay. The card that actually really impressed was Chandra on a turn 3. And then suspending either Alrun's Epiphany, Behold the Multiverse, or Saw It Coming. Vorinclex itself is actually not that good in this list. It's actually a kind of a win more card, I found. If Vorinclex is in play, attacks, and then next turn it's still in play and gets to attack again, you probably didn't really need to cast a Chandra and ultimate it, and you probably didn't need to cast a Nissa and plus it. You've just done 12 with your 6-6. So if you'd just been playing Llanowar Elf into a 5-4 like Damon was describing, you would have just won the game. So all these extra machinations with Chandra actually didn't feel worth it. And Vorinclex doesn't close out the game fast enough to stop you from getting destroyed by Wrath or like a Niv-Mizzet going over the top of you. So I think what I'd like to explore going forward is the Chandra into Alrun's Epiphany lines. If you play Chandra on 3, plus it, suspend Alrun's Epiphany, and then cast Alrun's Epiphany on your following turn. If you have another Alrun's Epiphany or another extra turn card in whatever the 7 other cards you get to see, you actually get to ultimate Chandra that way. And I found that to be actually like a super sweet line. So I think I want to go all in on that and just abandon Vorinclex. I think Vorinclex is probably fine in the mono green list that have lots of other counters to interact with, but or as a one of in the Salty Ultimatum list, but I don't think it's worth it in this kind of shell.
Can you explain again the Chandra sequence? How do you ultimate that?
Chandra comes into play on turn 3, let's say. Plus 2s, suspend Alrun's Epiphany. It has 5 loyalty. Mm. Next turn, you cast Alrun's Epiphany from Fortell, or if you have another one in your hand, you play your 5th land and cast it from hand. And then the next turn, you cast Alrun's Epiphany from Fortell.
Oh, I see.
So if you have 2 Alrun's Epiphanies in your top 11 or whatever, however many cards you get to see, you actually just basically win because you ultimate Chandra. And in fact, in an alternate build I had tried that played 4 Alrun's Epiphany, I was like hoping my opponent would tap out for Niv-Mizzet on their turn 4, which is kind of a crazy place to be. And they did. It's like, well, Chandra can't kill Niv-Mizzet. I'll just resolve my Niv and draw 4 cards. Actually, they discard the hand size. I'm sure they thought they were going to win easily. And I just took 2 turns, ultimated Chandra, cast, you know, like the front half and back half of Bonecrusher Giant twice and just did 20 to him.
That's amazing.
So yeah, Chandra actually impressed me, but Vorinclex was a little unimpressive. Like I said, the times when it's great is our games are going to win anyway. If you resolve your 6 drop, attack for 6, untap, attack for 6 again, and then get to resolve Chandra, it's like that could have been almost any card to beat your opponent.
But it was Chandra.
True.
So you're suggesting a new build that removes all copies of Vorinclex, essentially.
Yeah, and I'd want a ton of Like, the ability to just use that 2 mana from Chandra was actually insane. So I'd want to go up to 4 Saw It Coming, 4 Alrun's Epiphany, and, like, maybe 1 Behold the Multiverse, and then still keep the 4 Bone Crusher. Chandra just has this, like, incredible tempo-positive play. It's just really impressive.
Yeah, it's true. Whenever you play her and then just deal 2 to your opponent the turn she comes down in a controlling type of deck, it feels pretty underwhelming. But if you can use her to double spell, it always, you feel like you come out ahead.
Did you resolve the Alrun's Epiphany part the Water Veil question?
Yeah, Alrun's Epiphany is better. I still don't know why. Like, the 2/1s didn't really matter, but I guess sometimes they did. I did get to kill a Niv-Mizzet when they had to block my 1/1s, and I have Chandra's ultimate going. The ability to suspend with Chandra specifically makes it insane. I was considering, like, can I play, like, 6 turns cards and just try to literally just, like, turbo Chandra and then, like, increase the chance to do this multiple turns thing? I don't know if you can, like, do that, because it is a ton of air, and if they, like, damage Chandra or kill it, then you're just, you know, literally casting 6 mana explorers. So, yeah, that's something to be explored as well. But Alrun's Epiphany is better. I just don't know why.
I agree, and I also don't know why.
Okay, well, one to keep an eye on. Obviously, Alrun's Epiphany has been kind of the quiet star. I mean, not quiet. I mean, the card dominated Standard. The card that I did not expect to be dominant. Anything that's good in Standard and Historic is probably good enough in Pioneer, as we've seen multiple times. So rounding things out, tell us about your Peace of Mind exploration.
Yeah, so Abzan Peace of Mind. I went 0-4 drop, so let me preface that. The problem is that the Peace of Mind engine was requiring a bunch of setup. The rest of your deck doesn't do that much if you don't hit Peace of Mind, so you have to play all these cards to find it. And then once you have it going, it takes a bunch of mana, so you have to tap a white each for each of these iterations. And then that doesn't do anything unless you have a Desecrated Tomb in play. So what I have on the board is like an updated list that tried to solve some of those problems that still wasn't good enough. So I don't know exactly how to fix this list. I don't think anyone should really fool around with it that much. But I do think that if you had somehow to make sure you always drew Peace of Mind, then it would be sweet, because Peace of Mind, Desecrated Tomb, Deathless Knight is like the Thopter Sword combo, only you gain 3 life for every mana instead of 1. So like, as assembled, it's actually amazing, but like, assembling it requires you to play all these terrible cards, and then you're like so far behind, somehow the Thopter Sword combo like can't save you.
But we talked about a few Lorehold cards on Friday that have a trigger whenever something leaves the graveyard. Specifically that Elephant Cleric, Quintorius. You don't actually need to cast Deathless Knight, right? I'm guessing that can just like only live in the hand. So you could, you know, Peace of Mind is white. You could maybe go into Mardu colors. Would you be interested in that?
Yeah, I need to solve the like problem of how to find Deathless Knight. I tried like a variant where I was just like milling myself and playing Lurises. That's the list you see up here. Plus the Commune with the Gods. Yeah, it's like finding that Peace of Mind, like Death. Right, Shaman is a cool card with Desecrated Shaman or Desecrated Tomb, and maybe it would be a very good card with that Elephant as well. I'm not sure. I got to go back in the lab and you know, tweak all these numbers out and see what we can see here. But yeah, like if you could just guarantee Peace of Mind is in your opening hand, you just like play it on 2. That would actually be sweet. Like every time you discard Silver Smoke Ghoul, get that going, and then start like cycling Deathless Knights. That is awesome, but. Every game you don't do it, you just lose, and it's not even close. Like, your opponent plays a Llanowar Elf and then a 5-4, and you're just like, a Commune with the Gods, like, try to hit a 2-mana enchantment. Miss. Like, find a Silver Smoke Ghoul, put it in my hand. Sometimes I was like, would not even pick it, because I guess it's better in your graveyard. Like, resolve Citrus Supplier, pass a turn, like, take 12.
So this is a deck that is just missing on the rule of 8.
Yes, exactly. If you had 8 Peace of Mind effects, or like an actual like lock tutor that was efficient, or something like, if Commune with the Gods wasn't so bad, like it's just so clunky. And it doesn't even hit Peace of Mind like a huge percentage of the time. You just miss. And none of the creatures you find matter. So yeah, I don't know.
So Siege Rhino would not have helped?
No, because you're bad at playing fair, because you're not like playing Fatal Push or Thoughtseize. So like you resolve Siege Rhino and it's really good against the 5-4 or whatever, but they've got 2 other 4/5s or whatever. And so
That's a shame. I mean, the concept is so sweet, but it is fiddling around and these fidgety.
There is something there. Like once I got it assembled, it was just like single-handedly like beating decks. It's just there's a million things that they can do to interact with you and stuff. So I got to figure out how to solve that. But and then even like you assemble your whole engine, and you can still lose. It's like they resolve Ugin like minus two. Like, oh, that's good.
So something like Idyllic Tutor would be a little bit too slow.
Yeah, exactly. Like if there was a creature that like tutored for an enchantment that cost two exactly or something, you know, that was at least blocked before it died. I mean, I don't know. You got to have, you know, like a treasure mage or tribute mage, but in white or I don't know.
Yeah, you could Eldritch Evolution your Stitcher Supplier to find either Lurrus or Renegade Rallier and hope that you blind mill this Peace of Mind.
Okay, I'm interested maybe in that. Anyway, I'll have to tool around with it. I mean, this is literally just lighting ticks on fire right now, so I can't even recommend like avenues to pursue to anybody. I think just cast Sylvan Caryatid and bring to light like a normal adult. Don't be doing this nonsense.
Wrap another Narset, bring to light League to recoup this.
Exactly. Repair the damage.
Okay, well, maybe that's a good place to leave it here. Damon, you want to take us out?
Yeah, so until next week, we'll have more spoilers, and so just go out there and keep on learning.
All right, take care, gentlemen.
That's a wrap on episode 2 of Strixhaven Season. Tune in next week for part 2 of our Brewer's Guide to Strixhaven, and download the latest deck lists at faithlessbrewing.com. Support for this podcast is provided by brewers like you. If you like what we do, be sure to join our community at patreon.com/faithlessbrewing for Discord access, bonus content, and much more. That's all for today. Stay safe, and we'll see you next time.